a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. I'm Jesse Brown, and today we're talking about the news. We'll talk a bit about that pipeline we never built that might have come in handy right about now. We'll talk about OpenAI's new complaint. Somebody scraped their information without permission to build an AI. So now they know how that feels. Mostly, we'll be answering the question, what's worse than an American president who picks on minorities? A Canadian politician who picks on minorities only after an American president does it first. This guy, Poilievre, went from mimicking Stephen Harper to mimicking Donald Trump. It's like he's only aware of two options.
I'm only aware of two, but I mean, if you come up with another list, then you're welcome to do that, but I'm aware of two.
Wait for that. Hey, Dale Smith, freelance journalist and author, political columnist for Extra, LGBTQ news site people should check out. Welcome back to the show.
It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
All right. So, Dale, we're going to talk about the Canadian reverberations of Trump's stance on gender.
It will henceforth be the official policy of the United States government that there are only two genders, male and female.
So that's what Trump says, and then the question is put to Pierre Poilievre on CP24.
On his first day on the job, President Trump signed an executive order, the U.S. government only recognizing two genders, male, female. They're unchangeable. You know, if elected as prime minister, is that something that you're going to kind of walk in line with, or what are your feelings on that executive order?
Well, I don't know. Do you have any other genders that you'd like to name?
Me personally?
Yes.
I'm just asking more so if you're in line with what he is saying. Do you agree with what he's saying? Is that something that you would be lockstep with if elected as prime minister?
Well, I'm not aware of any other genders than men and women. I mean, if you have any other that you want me to consider, you're welcome to tell me right now.
Well, there's personally, I am a man. I am a, people will say, cis man.
There are
people there who, they say they're gender neutral.
Well,
you're a man.
Well,
yes. There are people there who say they're gender neutral. Yeah. They say they're gender neutral. They're a trans person. Is that something that you would recognize here? Whereas in the States, at least with their U.S. government, the way they're seeing it, there's only two.
I'm only aware of two. But I mean, if you come up with another list, then you're welcome to do that. But I'm aware of two. And as far as I'm concerned, we should have a government that just minds its own damn business and leaves people alone to make their own personal decisions.
Mm-hmm. A lot to say about this, but I think the place that I want to start is just by noting that he is lying. I'm not aware of any gender besides men and women. You're not aware of transgender people? Like, maybe you don't think that they're real or something, but you're saying you're not aware? Like, this is new information that you're just receiving right now? He's like, that's a lie.
He's never heard of a non-binary person? He's never heard of someone who's got they-them pronouns?
He's never heard that every now and then the doctor delivers a baby and it's not quite clear whether it's blue or pink for the nursery. He's not aware. There's a bare minimum of journalistic questioning that is lacking in that exchange. Because I think what he is suggesting is, and he said this elsewhere, he considers trans people dudes in dresses who want to go into women's bathrooms and beat women at sports.
Obviously, female sports, female change rooms, female bathrooms should be for females, not for biological males.
So if that's what he thinks, then he should be questioned about that so he can clarify if that's what he thinks trans people are. The other thing, Dale, I want to hear what you have to say about this, but I'm going to go off for just another second here. This is now a genre of Pierre Poilievre media clip. We saw it before when he was chomping on an apple, where the unprepared journalist asks him a loaded question, and then he just seems completely indifferent. And he actually flips it, so he's asking the journalist the question. And he seems like the one who's very reasonable.
On the topic, I mean, in terms of your sort of strategy currently, you're obviously taking the populist pathway.
What does that mean?
Well, appealing to people's more emotional levels, I would guess. I mean, certainly you tap very strong ideological language quite frequently.
Like what?
I think that this is why he does Canadian news interviews at this point, is that to create these clips where he seems so reasonable and he leaves these journalists sputtering, because this anchor on CP24 can't ask a simple follow-up question. Like, are you saying that transgender people don't exist, or you just don't recognize them? What are you saying? If I were Jenny Byrne, who is Poilievre's top strategist, I'd be trying to think of new ways for Pierre Poilievre to seem like a dick. I would be trying to do this every day. What could he do? He could be like yawning or chewing gum while he delivers an interview. He could be playing Pokemon Go on his phone. He could be like cleaning his ear. He could check his watch and then like put up his hand. You know what time it is? Time to end this woke nonsense. Rather than dog whistling, he could actually just start whistling.
Yeah, very true that this has become a genre of Poilievre interview. And the other thing, too, is, I mean, on the CP24 clip, if you go a little further on, the anchor does try to press a little more about, well, what about recognition of people who have an X gender marker and passports?
The current government, they currently have passports that allow people to put on, you know, gender neutral on their passport.
But at that point, Poilievre just completely changes the subject.
Is that something that you would advocate for?
I have to be honest.
Yeah.
So I have to be honest with you. I just saw your segment on homeless encampments that are popping up all over Toronto. We've got 25% of our population in poverty. Housing costs have doubled. Crime is rampaging through our streets. I just find it to be a strange priority to spend time talking about this.
So he's got his clip. He's made the anchor sputter. And then when the anchor composes himself enough to ask an actual question on how this is going to impact Canadians, Poilievre then completely changes the subject and tries to go back to, I want to talk about these very reasonable things, and here you're talking about some woke nonsense, because that's how he will always frame these things, and therefore go back to this trope of common sense, which is something that conservatives transnationally, transatlantically, have been trying to play into, because it allows them to, what they see as, claim the rational high ground in an argument, because they know that they can't make the moral high ground.
Can you talk about that as a journalist who covers queer issues? Because when Poilievre says, I just want to leave this alone and get out of people's business, the suggestion is that any kind of invitation to discuss these issues of sexuality, gender, identity are overreach of government. And he's positioning himself not as an anti-trans or anti-queer voice, but as a kind of libertarian, like, look, let's move past all of this nonsense and just talk about stuff that matters. What are the actual policy implications of what Trump is doing and what Poilievre is now suggesting he's going to follow in the footsteps of?
There's kind of two parts to that question. The first one is that he also tries to spin these kinds of things, so any recognition of trans issues or what we've been seeing in several of the provinces around these so-called parental rights questions where trans youth are involved, is that he is essentially insinuating that these are politicians who are inserting narratives into children's brains, or who are attacking families, or that kind of thing. He's positioning himself as kind of like, I'm the sane one here. I'm on the side of parents. You are somehow trying to corrupt these children with your woke nonsense, because, again, this is how he always frames these issues. It's kind of like him claiming in that interview with Peterson that we had to invent and import racism into Canada.
By the way, put aside race, this obsession with race that wokeism has reinserted.
Well, invented even.
Invented, I mean, in many ways.
It's the same kind of a construction, because he's saying that by other parties or other politicians discussing these issues, they're inventing them where there is no problem, when that's not really the case. But that is how he's trying to position his own dismissal of these issues. As for how these things play out in Canada, we mentioned the gender markers and passports, but he's already decided to make an issue of trans people in prisons, which is a federal issue for correctional purposes. it's hard to see whether he's going to start defunding human rights tribunals or so on who concern themselves with these issues, because he wants to essentially insinuate that these organizations are creating problems where none exist.
I think it's worth noting that if Pierre Poilievre is only aware of two genders, he wants to run a country that is aware of a wider spectrum of gender than that. Like, that is not in line with Canadian law. In 2017, C-16 passed. C-16 added the words gender identity or expression in three places in Canadian policy. It was added to the Canadian Human Rights Act. It was added to a section of the Criminal Code targeting hate speech. And it was added to the Criminal Code dealing with sentencing for hate crimes. So gender beyond male and female exists in Canadian law. Like, our systems are aware of it. So now we have to kind of wonder, like, well, what does it mean to have a conservative leader and possible prime minister who claims to not even be aware of these other categories or ways that human beings can be? Does that suggest that he is going to strip our policies of these distinctions, as Trump is trying to do in America? All right, after the break, we will hear what Pierre Poilievre said when Global News tried to actually press him on his statements about gender. When pushed for a follow-up by Global News, when Pierre Poilievre was asked, like, what exactly do you mean about this? All he was able to cite are these kind of, like, rage-farming edge cases.
I'm asking you if we could expect similar legislation if you became prime minister as Donald Trump.
What other genders would you add to the list? My policies on this have been very clear. No men in women's prisons, sports, or bathrooms. We believe that it's inappropriate for dudes to be in women's prisons, in women's sports, and in women's bathrooms.
He wants to talk about the trans issue purely in the scope of radical queer theory that your kids are being indoctrinated with, and dudes in women's change rooms, dudes in sports, dudes in women's prisons. Trans people aren't Santa Claus. They're real. They are a minority. And within that minority is the tiny, like, when we talk about these cases, which I think we can talk about them, and I do think that there has been an overzealous response to shut down conversation about these edge cases when they pop up. And I think that reasonable people can discuss some of these instances in sports and prisons. There was this really concerning murder case in Quebec where this individual, Levana Balouz, found guilty of fatally stabbing their partner, suffocating their two children, identified as trans, and critics are saying, well, this is obviously a ploy to get into women's prison. I think that, like, these are newsworthy stories. We can talk about them, but Poilievre wants to only talk about these issues through these kind of tabloidy, extreme, anger-making cases that have the impact of generating a lot of hatred towards the overwhelming majority of trans people who are not involved in either indoctrinating your child at school or putting on a dress so they can get into a women's prison.
Yeah, it's making a blanket case out of an exception, using one to tar the entire community. And in this particular case, I'm sure that correctional services will have some kind of assessment mechanism for whether they believe that this individual is trying to game the system and where they should best be placed in terms of security and so on, because that's what the correctional service does. They have their own systems for doing these things, and it shouldn't be up to politicians to write policy for the correctional service for the sake of clips on social media.
Let me give some credit to the CBC here, who quantified what I was sort of struggling to articulate earlier, just the degree to which these stories are outliers, these stories that have eclipsed all conversation of issues that do matter to trans people writ large. So here's Steve Rukavina writing about this Quebec murder case, putting it in context. Out of a total population of 13,000 offenders in federal custody, 12 offenders made 19 total requests, because some offenders made multiple requests, to be placed or transferred based on gender identity. And of those requests, 6 were approved, 10 were refused, and 3 were withdrawn. and the reasons for accepting or refusing a particular request are confidential. We did a whole series on pretendians in which we talked about the lax systems whereby self-identification as Indigenous was being exploited by white and non-Indigenous prisoners to get into Indigenous programs.
I need to tell you how big a problem this whole thing is. One reporter investigated these programs, and according to her sources, the majority of so-called Indigenous prisoners were not actually Native.
There is, I think, a reasonable conversation to be had about how self-identification can be exploited by bad actors. But in the case of people who are willing to actually lie about their gender identification in order to get shifted to a different kind of prison, like, we are talking about, you could count on your fingers and toes the number of people. And the fact that not all of these requests were approved supports what you were saying, Dale, which they're not just rubber stamping all of these requests. There seems to be some level of scrutiny that's placed on them. So it does just an incredible disservice to people who've had to fight for like decades to get the modicum of policy recognition that they have to be used as a political football in this way. What bugs me about it is the bullying, just picking on people who you can engender a lot of bad feeling. There's still a lot of prejudice and disgust, and there seemed to be a level of disgust that Polyev was. These things are hard to describe, but when he's like, I'm not aware of other genders, I picked up on something that he was playing to, I think, an uglier part of his base.
Yeah, well, definitely. I mean, part of this is a certain element of monkey see, monkey do when it comes to the MAGA crowd that he is very much trying to hang on to for his electoral ambitions, because he sees moving to the further right and capturing voters who typically do not vote to get him over the edge to win a government than he would in terms of playing to the center. Also in part because the conservatives convinced themselves that the previous two leaders tried to play to the center and it failed for them, even though they didn't actually really play to the center, and some last-minute conversions on the road to Damascus didn't convince the population that they were actually serious about any kind of policies that were trying to appeal to centrists. So it's part of this move to keep this particular base. And we see that this base is very motivated by the Fox News out there, who are motivated by the kind of lurid stories on social media about trans people. The one that keeps coming up is sterilizing children. Well, we don't perform any kind of gender affirmation surgeries on people under the age of 18. So they're coming in with these horror stories that they have read somewhere on the internet. And these are things that Polyev is playing to. I don't know if he necessarily believes them, but he is necessarily playing to these fears amongst this population, because that's how he thinks that they're going to get a response at the ballot box.
I don't care what he actually believes or who he actually likes or hates, but we can look at his words and his record. And it is interesting to look throughout his political career how he modulates his level of bigotry to what is acceptable. And he steps back. And there's a cowardice and an opportunism. Like, you know, even if you have terrible views, like, one can maybe appreciate on some level, like, well, they think what they think, you know. This guy, I remember when he insulted Indigenous people and said that what they really need is, you know, to pull themselves up by their bootstraps.
Learn the value of hard work.
We need to engender the values of hard work and independence and self-reliance. That's the solution in the long run. More money will not solve it.
He stepped outside of Harper's level of what was acceptable to say at a time when Harper was apologizing for the residential schools. And Pierre at the time took his punishment and went and apologized for saying that.
Mr. Speaker, I rise today to offer a full apology to Aboriginal people, to the House, and to all Canadians. Yesterday, on a day when the House and all Canadians were celebrating a new beginning, I made remarks that were hurtful and wrong.
It seems like very little has changed when he was trying to kind of modulate this culture war stuff very subtly before Trump took a big swing, you know, and he was sort of limiting himself to things like radical queer theory in the schools, you know, like, well, let's just keep this out of the schools. And not want to be seen like he's bullying trans people until Trump made that okay. And then the question is put to him, are you going to do the same thing? And he goes, well, I'm only aware of two genders. So what other genders are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean, it has to do with the permission structures that Trump and his win have put into place. And because he has created a permission structure for this kind of rhetoric, Polyev now says, this is acceptable in the discourse now, so therefore I can play to this. That's kind of how permission structures tend to work.
You wouldn't want to be like a laggard falling behind on taking shots at trans people. You know, you don't want Trump to be one-upping you in that respect. If the narrative is shifted there and Canadians are following Trump more than they're following Canadian stuff, let's take the rhetoric there. Dale, we're going to duly note some stories that our listeners might otherwise miss. What do you have today?
I want to duly note the notion that Energy East pipeline can somehow be signed off on. We saw some news stories this last week where after the premier's meeting, premiers like Tim Houston said the government needs to approve Energy East, but the problem is that the project doesn't exist. It's a dead letter. Building this mythology that there are all of these pipeline projects that are just sitting on a desk waiting for a signature before they can happen, and that's not actually true. I think that Canadian newsreaders are particularly given a disservice if we're not actually being given proper context on why these projects did not advance, and everyone will say, oh, it's because Trudeau brought in C-69. No, most of these projects were not approved long before that legislation came in, as well as to actually have a conversation about what that means for prices. If we did have a pipeline that shipped Alberta crude west to east, A, there are no refineries in the east who could actually process it, and B, they would be paying a whole lot more per barrel for the privilege of Alberta oil than they can currently get on the world market. So these are conversations that we are absolutely not having when it comes to a premier saying, well, we need more east-west pipelines. Okay, well, there's a whole lot more to that story, and absolutely nobody is actually spelling that out.
Duly noted. I want to duly note a story that I think some people are going to be familiar with. The details, though, I just love this story. It's reported widely in lots of places, but here's the Globe and Mail's version. Chinese startup DeepSeek sinks AI tech stocks as little-known firm upstages Silicon Valley giants. So it's written as a business story, fair enough, because like the business impacts here are huge. NVIDIA, which is a leading maker of chips that are used to power AI, their shares fell 17% when this news came out, shaving roughly $550 billion from its market cap. Canadian impacts here, big, big impacts for Canadian company Celestica, which builds equipment for data centers. Their shares plummeted 26%. Some energy companies which power the data centers did not escape either. Canada's Capital Power Corp lost 15% of its market value. All of this investment, heavy investment, like huge amounts of money in training AI models and the energy needed for AI and the processing power for AI, billions of dollars. And here comes DeepSeek releasing a large language model called V3 in December, following it up just recently with another one called R1, a reasoning model that can handle more complex questions and problems than standard chatbots. Okay, so is this just a question of China beating us in the AI arms race? No, it's how they did it. Here is what it cost DeepSeek. They said they spent $5.6 million U.S. to train one of its models. $5.6 million. U.S. companies are spending hundreds of millions of dollars to train individual models, while research firm Epoch AI has estimated that building the largest AI models will cost more than $1 billion U.S. in 2027. Not only did DeepSeek appear to dramatically undercut development costs, it claims to have done so using a relatively small number of NVIDIA chips that are not even state-of-the-art, because the U.S. has attempted to restrict the export of advanced chips to China in recent years to thwart the company's progress in AI. So they've been essentially like hooking up a bunch of Game Boys together and have cracked AI, and then they released it for free. They released it open source. So all of this crazy speculation in AI, this massively inflated balloon, it's like China's just like, here you go. And now everyone's playing with DeepSeek to see, like, the hype over AI is out of control, but I did not see this coming. You knew there was going to be some kind of a correction, But for China just to be like, here, we did this, everybody can have it, was not the correction that I was anticipating.
No. The words that stood out to me in the couple of pieces I did read about this were the claims to. And I don't know how much independent verification there has been for any of these claims and whether the claims that they are not using the same amount of data centers and so on is actually true. We have seen stories in the past where people have kind of stood up Potemkin villages and saying that they're getting these things that are smaller, faster, cheaper, when in fact there's a whole bunch of back-end infrastructure that is not necessarily being seen. I have to wonder how much of that is actually going to be verified in a situation like this. I do think that people need to remember that sometimes these AI miracles are just a Turk machine, and that the history of hoaxes for these new technologies is vast, and we should maintain a skeptical eye.
We just did a look at AI the Monday before last, where we talked about how a lot of these claims that AI companies make, well, actually, there's just like a room full of people. And now we also have OpenAI complaining, saying that, hey, wait a second, DeepSeek stole their training data. They stole OpenAI's training data. Where did OpenAI get its training data? OpenAI stole all of our data, and now it's been stolen by this Chinese AI company who have released it to the world open source. Delicious. The Globe and Mail did mention that DeepSeek does seem to have some limitations on what it will answer based on its country of origin. This came to light when they asked it about what happened in Tiananmen Square.
Of course.
And it said, let's talk about something else.
Duly noted.
All right, I'm going to be back with one last thing I want to talk about. But first, we're going to say goodbye to Dale. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Dale, where can people find you and your work?
You can find me on Blue Sky at Journo Dale, and that's all one word. And I'm still occasionally over on Twitter at Journo _ Dale.
All right, that's our show for today. Thank you for listening to it. You can email me about anything you heard at jesse@canadaland.com. And I'm posting some stuff on Blue Sky. You can check me out there. This episode is produced by James Nicholson, mixing and mastering by Caleb Thompson. Our director of audio is Max Collins. Fact check by Noor Azria. I'm Jesse Brown, the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So Cold. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.
February 13th is World Radio Day, where millions around the globe celebrate the medium which touches so many lives. All across this country, Canadians are celebrating too, including Farm Radio International and the National Campus and Community Radio Association, with a live broadcast through CKCU-FM from Ottawa. Learn more and participate in World Radio Day at worldradioday.ncra.ca on February 13th and catch the live stream.
The cheerful melody of the eastern bluebird doesn't bring a smile to your face. Perhaps its striking color and skillful acrobatics will brighten your day. Males are swathed in sapphire blue feathers with a rufous breast and white belly. The females wear demure shades of the same colors. Look for them along country roads, city parks, and other open woodlands, with plenty of grassy patches where they can hunt for insects. These birds can spot a snack from 60 feet away before swooping down to pounce on their prey. Bluebirds build their nests in cavities, like hollow trees and old woodpecker holes. In the early 20th century, eastern bluebird populations were on the decline as invasive house sparrows and European starlings took over available nesting sites. So backyard birders and conservation groups began putting up nest boxes and constructing bluebird trails to help restore their breeding habitat. Thanks in large part to this community-led advocacy, eastern bluebirds are now thriving. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein. Today's show is in memory of Bud Ayler, whose trail of nest boxes helped bring eastern bluebirds back to southwest Iowa.